On this election return morning, democracy as a financial asset. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. With ballots being counted, the control of the U.S. House and Senate are still not clear, but one key tranche of uncertainty has been removed. Joining us this morning is political scientist Ian Bremmer, founder of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group. Ian, welcome to the program.
David, good to be with you.
How would you like to be controlling a big investment portfolio this morning? You still don't know which way Congress goes. I mean, do we know enough early on this Wednesday morning to make any decisions about the future that depend on Washington?
A little bit, in the sense the big existential question, which has kept a lot of people up at night, which is what's the future of American democracy, looks a little more stable today than it did just 24 hours ago. The big winner on the Republican side is DeSantis. The big loser is Donald Trump and election deniers. And all of that implies less of a possibility of that big tail risk, a constitutional crisis in 2024, 25. And that's the one thing that out there politically could really have a structural impact on how portfolio investors think about investing in the United States and even the U.S. dollar. So I do think that actually matters.
Yeah, and looking at some of the exit polling and some of the results that we do have, yes, inflation, yet that was not the only thing on people's minds. Some of this democracy stuff about whether the system holds was also on people's minds.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact is that the one real wave that you saw was against election deniers running for gubernatorial races. So they basically got completely wiped out. You know, frankly, the Republicans right now may not be able to take the Senate. They would have been able to flip the Senate relatively easily with better candidates.
Now, I don't know if we're going to get a recession after the new Congress is seated, but more than 90% of CEOs surveyed think a recession is coming next year. Do the election results we have as of this morning help us at all understand how Washington would respond if we fall into that kind of abyss?
Not really. I mean, you know, the fact that you're going to likely have a split government is something that the markets generally respond better to. But the recession we're talking about in the United States is likely to be comparatively mild, assuming it occurs, much more so than what you are expecting across Europe. So the United States still looks by far in 2023 like the cleanest dirty shirt for the global economy. And I do think that a comparatively mixed and stable election outcome probably helps that.
Ian Bremmer, founder of the political risk consultancy Eurasia Group, thank you so much.
David, thank you.
Well, let me be clear, the Associated Press and other reliable sources of election return analysis have not officially called the House of Representatives for one party or the other. The Wall Street betting now is that at least the House goes to Republican control, although not with the wide margin for which conservatives had been hoping. This assumption guides the thinking of David Kelly, chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds.
You know, for the last 2 years, the administration has been able to more or less get stuff through Congress to implement their agenda. Going forward, everything's going to get blocked. So I think that means much less fiscal stimulus, you know, no tax cuts, no big spending initiatives until at least 2025.
If there's a recession that comes after this new Congress is seated, I know if, with this divided government that you're presuming here, does that change the calculation of how much economic stimulus we might get to respond?
Well, I think it changes the calculation as to where it's going to come from, because I don't think that Congress and the administration will be able to agree on any further stimulus, even if we're in a recession. And what that means is that later on next year, if we're in recession, the Federal Reserve is actually going to have to come to the rescue. So the Federal Reserve, as you know, has been busy tightening policy and raising interest rates all year. Maybe by this time next year, they're going to be cutting rates because there's not going to be any help for the economy coming from Congress.
All right, David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds, the chief global strategist there. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
Turning now to the UN Climate Change Conference going on in Egypt this week. Today we're hearing more from the lower-income countries most vulnerable to climate change, which are demanding action from the richer countries. The BBC's Justin Rolat reports from the Red Sea city of Sharm el-Sheikh.
There has been heated language at these UN talks. In a BBC interview, the Namibian president, Hage Geingob, said polluting countries were criminals and the world's poorer nations their victims. One report presented to the conference claimed the developing world will need $1 trillion a year for climate action by the end of the decade. The Prime Minister of Barbados, Mia Mottley, spoke of the need to reform international financial institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to make it easier for developing countries to access cash for climate initiatives. I believe this is a conversation whose time has come, she told the BBC. Meanwhile, the UN has published new rules to stop so-called greenwashing when businesses claim to be environmentally friendly but aren't really. And now the work of the conference is beginning in earnest. An army of diplomats and lawyers trying to find compromises on a host of issues here in the Egyptian desert.
Our friend Justin Rolat, BBC. We do have Facebook making the announcement this morning. It's laying off 13% of its workforce, about 11,000 people. The company's worried about ad revenue as central bankers work to slow the economy. Investors see people as costs, and stock in the parent company Meta Platforms is up 6.4% now. We have a report today on how a layoff can force foreign workers to, in some cases, have to sell their houses, take their kids out of school, and move out of the U.S. within 60 days. Marketplace.org has that if you miss it on the air today. Water levels on the Mississippi River have been really low this fall due to a dry summer in the Midwest. That is jamming up barge traffic and causing headaches for businesses that rely on the river. Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports now on the effect on farmers.
For grain farmers in the Midwest, the cheapest way to get crops to market is usually on the Mississippi. But this year,
the abnormally low conditions is hindering the nation's ability, really, to get those agricultural products out.
Clint Wilson directs Louisiana State University's Center for River Studies. He says the river isn't as wide or as deep as it normally is in some places. That means fewer barges can travel on the river, they can't carry as much stuff, and shipping costs for farmers are high.
And then that impacts their bottom line.
Agricultural input costs are also high, and the strong dollar is making U.S. agricultural exports less competitive, says economist Michael Doherty with the Illinois Farm Bureau.
So now you add this shipping cost on top of that, and you're just squeezing the farmers that much more.
Doherty says many soybean farmers are storing this year's crop until shipping costs start trending down. But forecasts show drought conditions aren't likely to let up soon. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.